Amen. Thank you, Tom. That's one of my very favorites. Good morning, church. Love that song. Oh, goodness. It is good to be with you. It's good to be together, as always. It's good to have my family back. They've been traveling around all over the Tennessee, and now I'm dispersing one of them to Alabama, so that's probably not an upgrade. It'll be good. I'm really looking forward to hearing the report back from the Huntsville Intercity Mission Trip. Every year, that seems to be one of the highlights of the summer. It's a really great work. So I commend Jonathan for getting that trip together and our teens for spending a week doing that great work. Really a great, great thing. If you have not gotten to me, I had some of you turn into me today, the small group information sheets that kind of to report malfeasances by your leaders over the course of the year. No, really, we wanted to get your feedback from that. If you still have that, you can still turn those in. If you would like to get a form, I don't believe we have any more over here this morning, but I could get you some. Just let me know. We'll try to make those available for you to fill out and then get back so we can change and make adaptations as best we can so that these small groups continue to meet a much needed space within our congregation to build relationships and encourage one another. You know that awkward situation when someone comes up to you and knows you, but you can't think of their name for the life of you? This week, Rebecca and I and my parents went to the fireworks show. We went to the Tullahoma fireworks show on July the 3rd. They had their dates confused, and we went, and it was a really great thing. And as we're sitting there, they had a band that was playing. It was doing a really good band and great time. But there was a lady that was kind of off to our left, and she was kind of dancing and everything. She looked over to us, and she was singing and the words, and Rebecca was kind of singing along too. And next thing I know, she's coming up to us, and she's got her hand on my shoulder, and she's saying some things to me. I'm like, am I supposed to know this lady? And she said something like, I saw your big picture at the beach. And I was like, what? I had no idea who this person was who was singing, was like pretending to hold the microphone, then holding it up to me. And I was about this far from my face. It was like super uncomfortable. And then I just realized she was drunk. But anyway, I was that whole time, I was like, Rebecca, do you work with this person? How do we know? And she goes, I don't know her. I thought you knew her. You know, it's that uncomfortable situation. It sometimes happens in a little different way. And imagine that you're at home and you're minding your own business, and suddenly the phone rings. This was a while back, before there was color. And all of a sudden, the phone rings, and you answer politely, you know, all the phone etiquette and all that stuff. But then the person on the other end just starts into the conversation. And normally, this wouldn't be a problem because the other person usually knows you pretty well, and you're able to figure out, based on their voice or something they say, you're able to figure out who it is. But for some reason, at this particular moment, their identity eludes you, and so now you're playing this fun little game that some of you have never gotten to play that we call Guess That Voice. And you're having a conversation trying to fill in the blanks and guess the identity. And well, it just so happens a few years ago, this is the newer and updated version of that game I was playing. It was an added degree of difficulty because I was being texted by someone who I did not know, and so I didn't even have the benefit of the voice. I'm trying to guess, based on context clues in a text, who this person is who does seem to know me. It's not just one of those random spam texts or anything. So I'm playing Guess That Voice without a voice. And to top it off, this person is telling me some specific things, including the fact that I'm supposed to bring my children to them. And I'm like, what? I'm supposed to bring my children to a stranger? I don't know who this is. And then I feel like I'm really behind or probably just didn't pay attention to something my wife explicitly told me. Well, as it turns out, the stranger on the other end of the line was the wife of our then youth minister in Nashville, which greatly improved my opinion of strangers overall. to know that it wasn't just this mysterious person out there. It was, in fact, someone I knew. I just didn't know that I knew them, right? And that's the way it happens sometimes in those face-to-face conversations, that you realize, oh, yes, I did know you. I just didn't know that I knew you. Or on those phone conversations, now I remember your voice and your cousin, the long-lost cousin so-and-so I hadn't talked to in forever, and you suddenly put a name with a face and the identity, and it all goes together. Now, if you grew up in churches of Christ, you probably are familiar with a Latin phrase that we often repeated in our prayers. It was, God, guard, and direct us. This Latin phrase appears frequently in especially closing prayers, right? At least that's what it sounded like, what was being said. In reality, in these prayers, what we're really asking for is God's intervention in our thoughts, in our actions, in our lives. What we really wanted was God's guidance and guarding and direction, right? And that's what we're asking for, but we were really vague on how this played out. Like, we kind of wanted it, but how does this happen? And throughout the New Testament, it kind of becomes clear, especially as we go through like Luke on into Acts and then on to the writings of the Apostle Paul, that these specific things, guiding and guarding and directing, seems to be attributed to the work of the Holy Spirit, that these are actions that God's Spirit is leading. But what does that mean? All right? If we're asking for God's guidance or God's guarding or direction, what does that mean? I mean, how do we experience this guidance? How do we experience this direction? And there are a lot of people who love God deeply, who follow God, who learn about God, who honestly simply never find themselves consciously realizing the guidance of God, right? There are lots of Christians, lots of people who love God, who even pray for God to guide, guard, and direct us, who never say, oh, this is the guidance of God. This is obviously direction from God. This is God's taking care of me. It's tough to pinpoint that and see what is happening. And so sometimes we may begin to wonder, you know, am I doing something wrong? Am I not paying attention? Is there some secret I don't know about? Am I off base? Are some other people who say that they are experiencing God's guidance, are they just making stuff up? Are they just, you know, looking for signs where there's no signs to be seen? So this morning, I want us, as we're continuing a kind of little study in this discipleship, I want us to talk about that. I want us to think about that, about how we as individuals, you and I, and how we as a congregation, Forest Mill, can go about identifying, recognizing, and then obeying the guidance and direction of God. How do we identify and obey the Spirit's leading? So I want us to start off by going back to a story from the Old Testament that I think serves this particular cause well. It's a wonderful little story about a little boy named Samuel, and it helps us understand some of what at least needs to be learned, because it's a little bit of a foretaste, I think, of what you and I experience. It's from 1 Samuel chapter 3. Where we read, the boy Samuel ministered before the Lord under Eli. Now, Eli was the chief priest in those days. And in those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There were not many visions. Now, this is a really interesting kind of phrase here. The word of the Lord was rare, and there were not many visions. And the text doesn't explain why this is the case. It doesn't explain what God's motivation was, if this was some sort of punishment, or if this was some sort of change in the way God was working with them. We don't know any of that. We're not given any of that. All we know is that at sometimes God's guidance appears to be different than it is at other times, right? At sometimes, apparently, God uses these visions, these dreams, these experiences, like we read about in the book of Ezekiel on Sunday nights, where they're whisked away in the spirit, at least the prophets are, and they experience this. And other times he doesn't seem to do that very much. The whole period between the Old Testament and the New Testament is sometimes referred to as the silent period, because the activity of the Spirit just seems to stop. I mean, and this included in Israel. They didn't really have any prophetic dreams and visions. They didn't know what was going on. And so God's guidance, God's direction, God's leading through the Spirit changes from time to time and place to place. Well, continuing on with this particular story, though, we're going to see what happens with young Samuel. Well, one night Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down in his usual place. And the lamp of God had not gone out, yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the house of the Lord where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." But Eli said, "I didn't call you. Go back to bed. Go lie down." And so he went and lay down. Again the Lord called Samuel, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." "My son," Eli said, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." Now, here we go. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. And a third time the Lord called Samuel, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." Then Eli realized that the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down, and if he calls, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening.'" So Samuel went, and he lay down in his place, and the Lord came and stood there calling as at the other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant is listening." Now this is exactly what Samuel did. He listens, right? And here's what I want us to point out right now, that God was speaking to Samuel throughout this story, right? Several times he calls to Samuel. And Samuel knew he was being addressed, but he did not know it was God. Right? Samuel knows something is happening. He knows he is being called, but he does not know that it's God. He actually had to learn how to recognize the voice of God. He had to learn to recognize that God was speaking to him. In other words, it is possible for Samuel, and I believe it's possible for you and I, for God to speak to someone and that person knows something is going on, but they don't know that it's God. So God could very well be speaking to you, even you and me, without us consciously realizing that it's God. So let's apply. What does it mean for God to be speaking to you? Because different people report different things. Some people have, you know, like Samuel, apparently hears an audible voice. Other people report having different experiences, visions or things that are entirely internal. Sometimes it's just feelings. So people report different sorts of encounters with God. So what does it mean to communicate with someone? Let's break that down just a second, because this is an important subject. It's a really pretty miraculous thing when you think about just communication in general. And we take it for granted that people can communicate. It is essential to community to communicate, whether it's spoken word or written word or body language or physical gestures. All of that, to have community, you have to communicate, right? Communication, I would submit to you, is really just guiding someone else's thoughts. Communication is guiding someone else's thoughts. So, Dallas Willard writes about this in a book he called Hearing God. When someone is communicating to you, all they're really doing is causing you to think certain thoughts that you wouldn't be thinking otherwise. So this morning, right, I'm communicating to you, and you are thinking thoughts that you would not have if I weren't communicating. You're thinking thoughts like, did he just say something? Is it time for lunch? I don't know what you're thinking, but you're thinking things that you wouldn't think otherwise, right? I'm sort of prompting these thoughts in your brain. And you, sometimes with a look, sometimes with the way you're moving, you are communicating things to me like, wrap this up, right? Now, because you and I, we're finite creatures. We're limited. We're human. We have to use finite means, limited means, to communicate with one another, to guide one another's thoughts. So if I want to guide your thoughts, I am limited to a few different things. I could write something down or put it up here on a PowerPoint, right? I could speak it out loud. Both of those are effective means for me to guide your thoughts, to change what you are thinking. I could communicate something. Suppose I were choking, right? And I wanted to communicate to you. I might use physical gestures, or my face might turn purple. All of that is communicating something to you, that something's going on with me. So we're limited in the way we can do that, but we can do it. So we make sounds. But because we have to use these finite means, we're limited. God is not limited. Remember, God is infinite. And among other things, it means a lot of things, but among other things, this means that God doesn't have to use any of that. That God doesn't have to use a certain mode or means to communicate. God can communicate directly with us because he's not limited to written or spoken or physical things. God can communicate directly with you. He can guide our thoughts without any of that intervening mess. Now, does God sometimes use that? Absolutely. God uses the written word to guide our thoughts, doesn't he? God sometimes uses the words or the spoken words of a godly person, right? Your elders or a godly friend or spouse, right? God uses those to direct us. God absolutely uses those other means of communicating, but he doesn't have to. He's not limited to that. God can and does communicate with us in a direct way, right? He doesn't have to use those symbols. He can simply guide a thought without any specific means at all. But now, part of what this means is that it's possible for God to guide thought in my mind, right? We're asking for God's guidance and God's direction, so God can guide thoughts in our minds, and I may not even know that God is doing it. Does that make sense? We've established two things: that God can communicate with us and us not recognize that it is God. We also not know that God can communicate with our thoughts directly. So, you ever notice how someone who becomes a Christian, sometimes without even being conscious of it, it's not as if they could do it, but they just seem to be a different person. Now, some of that may be changing their moral activity, right? They stop doing some things that are destructive, or they start doing some things that are positive, or maybe they begin a program of daily prayer or Bible reading or church attendance, all of that things. They may be conscious of that, like, I need to do these things. These are good for me. But sometimes it's just like their attitude changes. How does that happen? Are they just thinking, I need to change my attitude, and making themselves feel positive? If you could do that, if we could do that, then a whole lot of therapists would be out of business. You and I cannot just make ourselves better, right? So we see in new Christians how God can directly guide and influence thoughts, even if we're not consciously aware that it's God. So if that's true, and I believe that it is, but if it's true that God can, through His Spirit, guide our thoughts, that means, this is really important, that your prayer is not a one-way conversation. Okay? And we're getting a little deeper now. It is not you talking emptily to the sky or to the wall or wherever you happen to be facing. That prayer is not just a confessional booth with no one on the other side. That prayer is not just a wish list that you're throwing up to the divine Santa Claus. That prayer is actually a conversation between you in God. If God so desires, He can and may, and I believe He does, communicate back. To commune, again, is to be in community. We just took communion with God, whereby God communicated with us through the physical means, the body and the blood of Christ. Right? That is, God is using that to communicate something to us. And I believe that He does the same thing in prayer. Jesus says this about His people in His parable, the Good Shepherd, John chapter 10. He says, when He has brought out all His own, He goes on ahead of them, and His sheep follow Him. Why? Because they know His voice. They recognize His voice. To have a personal relationship with the Good Shepherd, to have a personal relationship with God, means that I have to be open to the possibility that I can recognize and follow the voice of the shepherd. Now, often the Spirit will prompt us with ideas. You ever been sitting there during a sermon, or maybe you're having a conversation with someone, you thought, you know, I really ought to say this or do this, or this, and this is the way it works with me, I'm just going to share. This reminds me, I should really write to this person. I should really encourage that person. Oh, I had forgotten about so-and-so or this situation. I really ought to fill in the blank. Now, these were completely attributable to some superficial, my mind was just floating away. I can do that all day long, right? I can just say, I can mark it up to coincidence, my wandering brain or my ADHD, adult ADHD and going on in my head that I'm just not paying attention and something just happens in my head. And I can and do that all the time, but we also ought to be open to the possibility that it's just the voice of the shepherd leading us, right? Often the Spirit prompts us with those ideas to encourage somebody who feels alone, to serve somebody who's in need, to confront somebody who's going down a wrong path. And I've talked with numerous people whose lives have been altered or transformed because of a simple kind word or a loving confrontation, that one little thing changed their lives, right? The right word spoken in the right way at the right moment is life-changing. And let's be clear here, the Spirit's leading has the capacity to alter the trajectory of someone's life, your life, my life, but also has the capacity to use us to alter others' lives, to alter our ability to have good thoughts or detrimental thoughts, to do good deeds or destructive deeds, right? And when those thoughts come, here's the main thing. Some people really emphasize this. They say that the main thing is to say, hey, it's God speaking to me. And I think that's important to identify, oh, this is the voice of God. I think that's an important thing. But it's not the main thing. It's not the most important thing. What is most important is that you actually do what the prompting says to do. It may be that all along, you've been a Christian for 10, 20, 50 years, that all along you've been obeying the voice without being conscious that it's the voice of God. That's entirely possible that you're just saying, this is my conscience. This is the way God has formed and shaped my conscience, so I'm going to do that. So you can have been obeying the voice all along, thinking because it's the right thing, and it is the right thing, but without ever consciously attributing it to saying, oh, this is the voice of God. The main issue here is not that you have the experience of hearing God's voice. And some Christians, that's where they place all the emphasis, is that you have this grand experience of having God talking to you or working through you. And yes, that's a great thing, but the main issue is that you actually respond with obedience. That's what God is doing for you. You know, sometimes it's tough to get through to my kids. They may have headphones in, they may be up in their rooms doing something, and I'm yelling for them, hey, you know, you need to do this, or you need to come down, or whatever it is. And I'm glad when they are like, oh, my father's talking to me. I'm really glad when they acknowledge me. That's super, super nice of them. But even more importantly than that is that they do what I'm asking them to do, right? Not just that they recognize I'm talking to them, but they respond with obedience. That's the adventure of following God. That is the guiding spirit of our Lord. So when God created the world in which we now live, it was designed for you and I to live in this like close communion, this communication with God. As we're all too aware, it doesn't work out that way very often, that God's creation has been corrupted. And so there's all these things in our world that aren't pleasing to God, that do distract us from God. But that doesn't mean that God has ceased being the same good, guiding, creative God that He's always been. God is the same God today that He was in Genesis 1, right? He continues to work within all of creation. God is as at work today as He was on the day He made light. God is creating today just like He was creating then. God is at work in creation. God is passionate about wanting to bring everything into right relation with Him. That's His passion. That's His motivation. That is what is He is at work doing in our world. And so for you and me, our calling, our mission is to join Him in that work. And whenever God is speaking to us, working through us, through His Holy Spirit, He is working to bring us alongside as the vice regents of creation, the ones in whom God instilled His Spirit. You know, we're going to create man and women in our image, and we're going to give them dominion over creation. You're going to name the animals. You're going to work in the garden. Unlike everything else, you're going to be co-partners. You're going to be partners with me in leading creation and working creation. And He's trying to bring us back into that work. He's trying to bring you and I alongside His creative passion. So in bringing hope to the weary, in bringing direction to the lost, in bringing forgiveness to the heavy laden. And rather than leaving us to do this on His own, God is used to do this on our own, God is inviting us to join Him in that work. God still speaks. The Spirit still guides. The world still is being transformed, being changed, being recreated. People still get blessed. God is at work doing that, those things through His Spirit, and He will do it through you. So if you are a Jesus follower, and I believe that we have a great congregation of Jesus followers here, but if you are a Jesus follower this morning, then the Spirit God has promised is inside of you. And our God, the redeeming, creating, judging, and comforting Father, is a guiding God. He'll do it for you. He will guide and guard and direct us. In whatever your area of your life you need wisdom, where you need guidance, we simply need to ask God. And He's promised He'll be there. And this morning, if you need comfort, if you need forgiveness, if you need strength, if you need encouragement, God is there and here and ready and willing to offer those things. And sometimes it will come through prayer. Sometimes it will come through our times of worship. Sometimes you need your brothers and sisters to come alongside you. And we want you to know that we are here for that work, that we want to be a part of that work and service to you. So if we can help you in any way, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?